Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. Sunday is in the books and can probably best be described as Survivor Sunday. Hopefully it wasn't carnage for a lot of you folks electing to use the Atlanta Falcons or Denver Broncos. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, Payne Insider. Payne, what's going on, my friend?
Not too much.
Trying to process everything we saw take place in the NFL yesterday, including that explosive first quarter from the Jaguars and Rams, much to our chagrin.
The dogs were out in full effect. And again, I hated the card. So it was one I kept extremely light in terms of bet size. And did more live stuff yesterday than usual to make up for it. But yeah, it wasn't a great day by any stretch.
We should have known as an omen last weekend when we were recording the podcast. Your dog starts going bonkers in the background, and that momentum carried forward into this week.
Was that on the college variety, or was that on the NFL?
I think that was on the NFL. I want to say it was Bears-Vikings on Monday, but at this point in the season, I'm pretty sure everything blends together.
It was.
So I could be
Bears covered.
I could be completely wrong. You mentioned all the dogs that get there. By my tally, dogs 10-2-1 so far this week in the National Football League. Obviously, the two biggies. The Dolphins are racing a 17-0 halftime deficit. Winning outright is about +670 underdogs at betonline.ag. And of course, in the nightcap where the New York Giants look semi-competent. I'm not going to give them full marks. It was more Denver incompetence winning that game outright 23-10. And I feel like that's the perfect place to start, Payne. I mean, we didn't even go through the Dolphins-Falcons breakdown in greater detail on Thursday. Miami shows no quit whatsoever, erases that deficit, comes back, and gets a huge season-defining victory down there in the Atlanta.
Gritty. What a win.
Finally saw J.J. Finally saw J.J. emerge from witness protection.
Atlanta has trouble stopping the run a little bit, so he got going. Jay Cutler wasn't very good. I believe he only completed 4 passes of 10 or more yards in the air. So defense, again, was fantastic. Getting a lot of help from young guys on that side of the ball. Tankersley, huge play to end the game, causing the deflection. But again, you get the ground game going and the offense looks competent. I will say this, the Super Bowl hangover appears real from the Falcons. And life without Baby Shanahan appears also real. I think there's still an adjustment period there that's still in full effect. They've been without key guys, though, on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And I think that's hurt a little bit. And, man, getting shut out at home in the second half off a bye week is tough to make excuses for. But I will say, you know, they're a little banged up, still out wide. Julio didn't look 100%.
And no Mohamed Sanu again yesterday.
Correct. And right now, if you look at the film, there's some turnover luck that's not going their way. I think Matt Ryan has 6 picks. We've charted 4 of them on deflections. So, you know, maybe they get it turned around. And maybe it's as quick as this week.
That's how I say. If they're going to get it turned around, I'm sure the game on Sunday against New England is one they've definitely have circled. We'll, of course, cover that in a little greater detail, along with a lot of the look-ahead lines that we want to discuss, movie review, and, of course, your big game breakdown for tonight's Monday Night Football contest between the Titans and Colts, brought to you by the American Sports Betting Coalition. So along with the Falcons' collapse in the second half, Payne, you watch the Giants go into Denver, a very difficult place to play, and dominate from start to finish, at least on the scoreboard. Then you dig further into the box score and realize the Giants were still outgained 412-266, the beneficiary of 3 turnovers. What do we take away from that game? Was it just a Denver no-show, or did we finally see the Giants play with a little bit more of a sense of purpose, albeit without a couple of their big names offensively?
One team didn't have any receivers, and the other team doesn't have a quarterback. And that's exactly...
That sounds like a trick question. I'm not sure where we're going with this.
Simeon's not very good.
Okay, I thought we were going to take more Eli jabs.
We can't figure it out because he looks pretty mobile. He throws a nice ball. He's supposed to be extremely smart. Went to Northwestern. But man, does he has trouble reading things. That interception, he's staring it down the entire way. The coverage is cover two. How on earth he throws that ball from a very smart guy is beyond me. So he's struggling with his confidence. He's reverted back to what we saw last year when there were question marks about him. Started the season pretty good on the straight decline. So I'm not sure what they're going to do at quarterback there. I will say this. By no means were the Giants fantastic, but they had a great game plan from the onset. And I think the offensive line really took it upon themselves to be able to employ that game plan, right? It was keep away. That's effectively what it was. Play keep away, have a couple runs on first and second down, keep the clock ticking, and then have Eli bail you out on third and three, third and four, third and five. And it was a extremely slow-paced game. So, you know, you look at the Giants, they're pretty slow to begin with, but they had 54 total offensive snaps this week. Darkwa, who I've been kind of clamoring for quietly for the last 2 or 3 years, saying he was their best back out of kid out of Tulane. He spent time with the Dolphins. I had seen him a little bit. He averaged over 5.5 yards per rush attempt. So the offensive line, I thought, did a fantastic job keeping Eli upright for the most part and being able to establish a ground game, which allowed them to employ that keep-away style.
Yeah, they definitely stayed ahead of the chains down in distance. And you mentioned Darkwa. First time all season we've seen that interior of that Denver run defense really get exposed and by the least likely of candidates in the form of the New York Giants. So big win for the Giants, getting on the board, first win. But if you dig into some of those stats, not exactly indicative of nearly a two-score victory going away. Tampa, Payne, we talked about this game in greater detail. There was some sharp money that came in on the Bucs on the road in Arizona. I know they head into the bye week. Some injury concerns around Jameis Winston. But they were down 31-6 headed into the fourth quarter before Ryan Fitzpatrick mounts a tremendous comeback. What do we make of the Bucs right now? Because I still don't think a whole heck of a lot of the Arizona Cardinals, despite Adrian Peterson going into the fountain of youth, at least for 60 minutes.
So, public was on Tampa. I know Mason had alluded to there was some money on Arizona at +2 on Thursday. That game got down to as low as 1. Pick 'em in some spots. And then despite the public being on the Bucks, there was a significant move from a group that sent that nearly to 3. Now, I didn't see exactly where it closed, but I know when that initial move came in, it touched 3 and didn't last very long. I don't know what to make of the Bucs. It is clear they don't have a leader. And that's coming from Florida State guy. And that's coming from Jameis, who's been a leader his entire life. For whatever the reason is, they don't seem to be rallying around him. I don't think Dirk Cutter's very good. They're a mess. And for whatever reason, it's just not happening offensively. They got some nice weapons. The offensive line's been okay. You get Doug Martin back. You think, hey, boost to this offense. Something's going on there. Not quite sure what it is, but it's ugly right now. I was shocked, and I flipped that game on for a little bit. I haven't gone back and watched the All-22. And Arizona wasn't fantastic by any stretch. Obviously, Adrian Peterson was running with a purpose. We didn't think he'd be or have the impact most thought he would. Pleasantly surprised. He looked like he had a little burst. He was running with purpose.
He ran pissed off.
He did. So that'll be interesting to see if he can keep that going for the next couple of weeks, what that does to their team offensively. But again, I always come back to this. I am all for being aggressive. But the only reason that game got close is up 31-6, about 7 minutes to go in the third quarter, the game is over. Adrian Peterson's running effectively. Why on earth is Palmer throwing a 50-50 ball up for grabs 40 yards down the field? And of course, Grimes picks it off, returns it, gets the offense in plus territory, and then all of a sudden it starts to get a little hairy. I'm all for being aggressive. I'm like the most aggressive, like I want my offenses to be aggressive, but it's getting to the point of stupidity for this Arizona offense.
Well, I mean, you had a converse now to Arians' credit, and I'm not going to give him full marks for playing that way. New Orleans pretty much folded their tents up 35, and that became a one-possession game late against the Lions.
That would have been the largest comeback in NFL history.
Yeah,
the defense came through. Nice little pick six from the one.
Four defensive touchdowns in that game. Yeah. Three for the Saints, something that's not obviously.
There's actually sharp money on the under of that game, too. So, I mean, I just think that's funny, right? Because the overall perception is like, oh, you know, pros never lose. You know, no, the reality is it just requires 55, 56, 57% to not have to punch a time clock or work a 9-to-5. And you know, you can be on the ugly side is you can be wrong, right? A loss is a loss. But that actually took some sharp money from some sharp guys. And that was just a stone cold loser.
Don't go on the rant here encouraging all of our listeners to quit their day jobs and start betting sports. College football is a prime example. We see a game move 5 points and it loses by 40. So the good thing is we tell people all the time in sports betting.
New Mexico?
Yeah, New Mexico. I'm not going to let that game die.
You're not going to let the Fresno game go.
No, I'm not going to let that Fresno game go. Maybe by Wednesday we record the college football podcast, I'll let it go, but not going to let it go now. As we say all the time, it doesn't matter if you lose by 40 or you lose by half a point. A loss is a loss. We wear them around here. We tell you when we win. We tell you when we lose. The unfortunate part, Payne, we had the first half under in Green Bay and Minnesota. Thought we were sitting pretty once Rodgers went down, and that wasn't quite the case in the least. Two other...
They didn't get that one, fortunately.
No, that would have been
back. That would have been the brutal one. 0-0, heading to the second quarter. And I actually took a step back. I said, oh, I stopped watching the game. I said, 0-0, under 23, Aaron Rodgers out. That thing's... in the bag. I checked the score. It's 7-7 with 10 minutes to go now. And I text you. I said, this is getting hairy. This will be interesting.
And this is where I can disclose my superstition when it comes to that you'll make fun of me for. And I'm sure the listeners will as well. When it comes to first half unders, I record all the ones that we bet. I go back and watch them later. I refuse to watch first half unders because I know all it takes is one play for those things to get sticky. So
yeah, I mean, one defensive score, one special team score. Yeah. For sure, and they kind of derail. I will say this. I enjoy watching them because I like boring. I like unders in baseball. I like punts in football. Punts, when I'm on a first half under, it makes me a little tingly below the belt.
See, full game unders I can watch no problem because, all right, like you can handle, you know, one miscue. You can handle a short field or something along those lines. You can really do it. Baseball unders I love because there's nothing that's more enjoyable than a well-pitched game, quick three up, three down type of stuff. Football first half totals, for whatever reason, I just can't really watch a whole heck of a lot. And speaking of which, we're starting to see the Monday Night Football game get obliterated to the under right now. But
yeah, that's the right side.
We'll get to that in due time.
The worst part about those two games is if you got 44, which is the largest key number in the NFL, you actually pushed the full game Jaguar game and
you win the other
full
one
game
easily.
Minnesota game was easy as well without. The Packers scoring again in the second half.
And there is something very real. I mean, to try and show that there is a human element to what we do. I mean, I go back and forth and try and figure out if it's anger or if it's angling. When you have a first half total, it doesn't go that way. You get a better adjusted second half number. Trusting your numbers is part of the process. I didn't bet either second half under. In the Vikings game, the 21.5 disappeared quickly to 21. In the Rams game, you could have gone under 7.5 with each team mustering a field goal. Before we kind of shift gears to the games coming up this week, Payne, and some of the adjustments we've seen from look-ahead numbers, two other teams I want to ask you about. One that was very good on Sunday and one that was pretty piss poor. Pittsburgh Steelers finally get back to basics, run the football with Le'Veon Bell, and more or less dominate that game against the Chiefs from start to finish, hold Kansas City to just 6 yards of total offense in the first half. And then on the flip side, what the hell is wrong with the Oakland Raiders? Now, I know the Chargers took money, and Derek Carr's not 100%, but the Raiders look like a shell of them former selves, now losing 4 games in a row.
The game plan was easy for Pittsburgh. And if Mike Tomlin screwed the pooch 2 weeks in a row, you know, that new extension he got probably should have been ripped up. But Pittsburgh, I think, went for 194 on the ground. They stayed to the ground. Le'Veon Bell got the amount of touches he should probably get every single week. 57% of runs graded out successful over 5 yards per rush attempt, and that not only is how Pittsburgh should play, that's exactly how you should attack Kansas City. And they did that to perfection. The defense was fantastic. I've been talking about the marked improvements on that side of the ball year over year, and that's what makes this situation in Pittsburgh very, very interesting. There's a ton of talent there. Let's figure this thing out. because this is a Super Bowl quality team. The other team you asked me about was who? Oakland?
Yeah, but one last thing on Le'Veon Bell. How much do you think his performance, you know, Kansas City obviously allows running backs to have big days if you stay committed to the ground game. Do we say that Le'Veon is now finally where he should have been had he been there for preseason and some of his struggles early on was just getting used to game action? Or is it more an indictment of Pittsburgh's play calling, not electing to get him the touches?
Well, at the very beginning, he wasn't very good. And we find out, you know, week one, they go to Cleveland. Cleveland's actually got a respectable rush defense. But yeah, I mean, it's going to take him. He misses, sits out all of camp. It's going to take him 3-4 weeks as we expected. You know, we had talked about this offense having some struggles early on, going through this transition process of getting Bryant back, not having Le'Veon Bell, things of that nature. And that's kind of what we saw, struggling offense to start. But every week he needs to be the go-to guy. And right now with Big Ben struggling with his deep passes, it doesn't necessarily have to be the conventional run. It can be a screen pass, which basically acts as a run. Hell, I'd put him out there. And I know you have, you know, Brown is a fantastic receiver, but line them both up outside. Maybe throw a bubble to Bell. You know, things like that. Those are new school runs in my book. So there's other ways you can implement him in the ground game, so to speak.
It's a very good point. Now, the other team I asked you about was the Raiders Oakland. And some of their struggles. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they're a mess. This was a team that we pegged to not to have a huge, huge regression this year. Don't like their coach. They're not able to run the ball right now. The offensive line has regressed for some reason. One of the highest paid offensive lines in the NFL. They're not getting any push. They're not protecting their quarterback. I won't put you on the spot, but you said maybe there was some internal stuff going on there between Carr and his offensive line in terms of how things were handled with the old, you know, stand up, kneel thing. I don't know. You know, defensively, I've been saying this for 2 years now. They're not very good defensively. Now, they had a little bit more of an inspired effort this week. The defense isn't great. Their head coach isn't great. Amari Cooper has appeared to regress. He's got the drops. Had some guys injured. Crabtree's been beat up a little bit. Carr does not look 100%. Obviously, I told you this. He was a tough guy. They were saying 4 to 6 weeks. I said, no. Like, this guy's going to get out there. And he did. He got out there after 2 weeks, but he is not himself. What would have been a fantastic spot for Thursday night, I'm not sure I can go to that well, although it's probably, you know, if you have a season-defining game, that's going to be it on Thursday. I think there's also question marks there, not to get too far ahead to Thursday, with the fires out west. Is that officially going to be a home game? Are they going to potentially move it? What? I don't know what's going on there. So yeah, what could have been a fantastic spot with, you know, the travel for Kansas City when you talk about a short week, but also traveling, you know, two time zones. It would have been a fantastic spot for Oakland. Now have to dig back in and reassess that a little bit.
Coaching mismatch too there with Jack Del Rio against Andy Reid on a short week. I know a lot of people are going, Jesus Christ, guys, you guys have been on this podcast for 20 minutes, haven't even addressed the single biggest story in the NFL over the weekend in Aaron Rodgers and what he means. Don't worry. We will get there when we talk about the point spread implications for Green Bay's home date against the New Orleans Saints. But we mentioned the Steelers, and like we do every week here on the Bet the Board podcast, we try and figure out how the market has reacted, whether it be overreacting or underreacting to 1 week's worth of results. And I found this move fascinating, Payne. When we look at the Steelers now coming home off of that big win against Kansas City, playing host to their division rival in the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, look ahead number for this at the Westgate Superbook had the Steelers listed as 7-point favorites. Pittsburgh goes out there, they knock Kansas City from the ranks of the unbeaten, and BetOnline.ag now has the Steelers as 5.5-point home favorites. Has that much changed week to week, or am I completely missing something with why the market may be responding in this kind of fashion?
The look ahead line was produced after they lost at home to the Jaguars as well.
Correct. Correct. I mean, you have everything possibly going into this equation that has me scratching my head going, all right, maybe I'm oversimplifying this. And then you look at some of the early bets percentages, and I know it's only Sunday. The public decides they want to back Cincinnati here. So, interestingly enough.
Typically lower scoring game. So points do become more valuable in this series. You do have the Bengals 2 weeks to repair, but I think that's probably
negated by Marvin Lewis being your
more interesting touching point, because right now these teams out of the bye aren't performing overly well. It's a really, really small sample, so I don't want to have a blanket statement here. But with this new CBA, These players are doing less and less during the bye, and that means time away from football mentally, physically, and a lot of these coaches, we know they have massive egos, so they're trying to implement brand new things while their players are mentally and physically away, and it just hasn't worked out well, the addition of new things. Clearly, it's a heated rivalry. Bengals get bounced from the playoffs in agonizing fashion, so this is one they've had circled. I'm not sure I'm buying that all is right in Cincinnati suddenly just because they've beat Cleveland and Buffalo. So I'm either not going to be on this game, or I'm going to let this game continue to trickle down and then reevaluate.
You mentioned Bengals-Steelers being a little bit lower scoring pain with the familiarity between two division rivals. A game taking place in the Twin Cities that doesn't forecast to have all that many fireworks. The Minnesota Vikings, 5-point home favorites against the Baltimore Ravens. Total in the game, 39 at betonline.ag. Look-ahead number for this game had the Vikings listed as a 3-point favorite pain at Westgate Superbook. Obviously, Baltimore has major concerns on the offensive side of the ball. Can the Ravens rectify any of the issues that have plagued them through the early going this season?
Probably not.
I appreciate the brutal honesty here.
This isn't going to be a total fix. This can't be a total fix. There's just, you know, they don't have the horses. But you can improve some because there's really only one way to go but up. And, you know, To their credit, they have faced one of the toughest slates of opposing defenses. But
well,
Joe
sure,
Flacco,
shit ain't gonna get easier this weekend on the road against the Vikings.
No, but you know, there is trying to give a glimmer of hope here. Now I'm gonna probably you know hit you with the mallet over the head. Flacco is horrific, right? You know, again Sunday he averaged 3.8 yards per play on 44 passing snaps. And why this is such a big deal is Joe Flacco has the highest salary cap hit this year of any player in the NFL. And so when you're paying a guy this much, there are going to be holes other places. And there are a lot of holes on this offense. For the Vikings, just think about it. I mean, this is that. Coined the black and blue division. I mean, everyone in the NFC North is beat up. So, you know, I'm not quite sure what they are. The Vikings have been hit with the injury bug as well. They're probably the favorites still in that division. They're going to get... You know, listen, the Lions, we've talked crappy about them all year. They're going to have a shot, obviously, now that, you know, everyone else in that division isn't very good. The one spot, though, with this Vikings team is, you know, the defense has been good against the run. Hasn't been great against the pass this year. But again, you look at the rest of the division with no Aaron Rodgers now. The Bears go to Trubisky as a rookie quarterback. Lions are a mess. I mean, they're still going to be the favorite here, the Vikings.
I mean, really hard to argue with that, given the fact that the continuity becomes that defensive unit. At least if you can be good in one facet of the game, it may be able to carry into the others. Stephon Diggs, we expect him back. You think this is a short-term injury or something he's going to be dealing with for quite some time on that Vikings offense?
I kind of talked about this last week a little bit, and it's a good question. I will say this. I thought he would be out last week. I don't know where the probable reports came from. I expected him to be out. There was one guy, he dealt with this groin thing last year, and they rushed him back, and it became like a problem for multiple weeks. One guy said this would be something that would probably have him fully healthy if he came back after their bye week. Now, I don't know if they use that approach. We'll see.
It's worth keeping in mind if you want to move on this particular game.
The center was also out this past week. No one kind of talked about that. And that's what made this very interesting. And again, I didn't play the Vikings this week. It was the professional side. I just couldn't do it when you go backup center, handing it off to a backup quarterback, handing it off to backup running backs without Stephon Diggs in the fold. Now, yes, the Vikings get there. Probably looks a little different if Aaron Rodgers doesn't go down. Probably not that easy. I ended up, you know, I talked to you a little bit. I said, hey, you got to go now here on this live. As soon as Aaron Rodgers went out, I didn't get it. Vikings were +1.5. So that was one of the live angles I attacked. And again, professional bettors got pretty fortunate there with the Vikings. I know the score looks different, but it's a completely different ballgame if Aaron Rodgers plays.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. They're not winning that game 23-10 going away if Rodgers is out there by any stretch of the imagination. You mentioned the NFC North and a division going through a bit of upheaval on their own. The Chicago Bears return to Soldier Field. They get Carolina, the Panthers, off the mini-bye, having played on Thursday night, coming up on the short end of a decision against the Philadelphia Eagles. This number right now, Payne, trending towards 3 at betonline.ag. Total in the game, 41. Look-ahead number here had the Panthers pegged as 4.5-point chalk. You on board with this move, or we think it's a little bit of an overreaction given Mitch Trubisky getting the Bears into the win column against the aforementioned Ravens in overtime yesterday afternoon?
Well, the Panthers lose on national TV in the spotlight Thursday night game. Bears went on the road at a team that was perceived to be somewhat competent. I'm probably not on board with this move. I will say this, though. The Bears, they're playing tough. The defense is playing well. Trubisky seems to bring out confidence in his teammates. It's clear they want him to be the guy. He has an ability to make throws that Glennon cannot. He has the ability to move the pocket. He has ability to pick up yards on the ground, which makes a defense game plan differently and allow other players to have more space to operate. You know, we had Tom Waddle on the show a week ago, and he talked about Glennon's turnovers. And then we saw Mitch throw a horrific turnover that essentially ended the Monday night game against the Vikings. And this week on the road at Baltimore against a elite pass defense, that Ravens defense graded out number 2 in the NFL against the pass. He did a fantastic job. I know they didn't ask a lot of him, but he didn't have a single turnover-worthy pass. I actually got a chance to watch this game, charted it. Not a single one. Now, you got some help, right? You get the defensive touchdown. You get your running back throwing for a touchdown. But in general, you see them playing tough. You see them playing confidently with Trubisky under center.
Payne, you mentioned Trubisky and obviously the struggles of Joe Flacco. Probably hyperbole to say it, but have you seen an NFL game where there was less talent at the wide receiver position than in that Bears-Ravens game yesterday?
There wasn't a lot out there. And the soft human from UCF, Rashad Perryman, managed to limp to the sidelines and into the locker room again.
Hey, I give Brash-
Man, is that a bad draft pick.
I give Rashad credit. He's going to collect millions of dollars and never have to do much in an NFL game to try and warrant that particular paycheck.
Brutal.
We talk about soft humans, and I don't think anybody will describe Aaron Rodgers as such, but he looks to be lost for the season with a broken collarbone. This number on a look-ahead line with the Saints traveling to Lambeau to take on the Packers had Green Bay listed as a 6.5-point chalk. Now you're looking at a major market shift, obviously, due to the injury. Right now at betonline.ag, the Saints a 5.5-point favorite, total in this game of 48.5. And Payne, during the game yesterday, I tweeted out that you should expect about a 9.5 to 10-point adjustment for Aaron Rodgers' absence. I know a lot of the old school guys say, nobody's worth more than a touchdown. What's the general consensus about what Rodgers is worth to the number in your circle?
Well, I will say this. This is starting to get a little out of hand. So I think I was the one a couple years ago, like pounding the table, that Aaron Rodgers was worth 10, 11 points over Scott Tolzien.
Scott Tolzien, baby!
And we eventually got there after like 3 weeks. They initially tried like 6.5, just wasn't enough. Like 7.5 wasn't enough. Finally, they went to 10. It was like, okay, they were somewhat competent. Still wasn't enough. And that was the move. Roughly 10 points. So I get where you came from there. And now the market's even higher. So what was the look ahead?
Look
ahead on that was green. Packers minus 6.5. It's now Saints minus 5.5. Monkey Matt there, what is that, 12?
12 by those of us scoring at home. 6.5 plus 5.5.
Okay. I mean, we're bordering now on getting ridiculous here. And so, you know, I will say this. The defense not as good as it was then, and you will have to rely on the defense a little bit more, especially this week against the Saints offense. But Hundley has been in the system for 3 years. He's been learning from Rodgers. Obviously, McCarthy is going to implement a game plan more fit to Hundley. Ty Montgomery did drop a touchdown pass. Mentally, I think Hundley's probably 100% prepared to play now. He's at home in Lambeau. It's different than on the road in Minnesota. He's certainly better than Scott Tolzien. You know, he's mobile. They're going to do some different things for him. They're going to tailor a package, right? I know it's the professional thing to say, like, you know, Hundley was preparing to play. Obviously, he wasn't preparing to play. Now he'll be prepared to play. You see him kind of go off to the sideline, give Rodgers a little dap. The press conference after the game seemed encouraging confidence-wise. He knows what he's going to have to do. Clearly, this is a huge downgrade. But this is going to keep ticking up. God forbid we see a 14-point adjustment here.
Well, a couple of things in play, obviously. Rodgers' injury being one. Are we seeing the Saints' power rating improvement in the eyes of oddsmakers as well, contributing to a little bit maybe of the inflation taking place with this number?
You know, right now, from the beginning of the season where we had the Saints a slightly below-average team to right now where they're a slightly above-average team, I think we made about a 2.5-point upgrade in power number for the Saints. I probably won't make a massive adjustment this week. Obviously, you know my feelings on the Lions. They were in a horrific spot with a boatload of injuries, and they almost blew the largest lead in NFL history. So I'm not going to make much of a move this week in terms of their power number.
Well, I mean, I guess it's a perfect segue to one of the Saints' biggest rivals within the division, where the Atlanta Falcons are on the road looking for Super Bowl revenge on Sunday Night Football against the New England Patriots. Look ahead line had the Patriots a 4-point favorite over the Falcons. Right now at betonline.ag, you see New England a 3-point favorite. Total on this game, 54.5. Payne, I don't know which one of these two teams is having a bigger struggle so far in 2017, trying to figure out their identity. You mentioned Atlanta going through some issues with offensive coordinator, obviously, retooling a little bit on the offensive and defensive lines. But New England, every time you want to give them a free pass, they put up a dud defensively. I mean, they let the Jets hang around way longer than they should have yesterday up there at MetLife Stadium.
So, right now, well, first of all, this line, the look ahead was 4. It's currently 3. Did this open 4.5 some places?
I did see some 4.5s out in a number of locations.
Yeah, and so now we're down to 3. So it seems like folks are getting to the Falcons somewhat quickly with that Super Bowl revenge. Both these defenses, I mean, the Patriots are getting better. I mean, it was historic pace bad the last, you know, to begin the season. Right now, they are trending a little bit better. They got fortunate with the Safarian Jenkins touchdown, no touchdown. That was a touchdown.
Yeah, so, I still don't know what the hell the officials were looking at on that play, by the way.
I mean, I guess he was bobbling it at the point he crossed the goal line. I don't know. So, you know, you probably get lucky there in terms of actual points on the board. The Falcons have the better defense right now. I think we'll see some improvements there. You know, they're without some guys on that defensive side of the ball. Vic Beasley did come back this week. I watched every single snap of the Dolphins game. He had zero burst. Maybe they rushed him back a little too soon. My eyes were not deceiving me. I went back and kind of charted stuff there. He rushed the quarterback 20 times. Didn't have a single pressure. So Vic Beasley did not look healthy. I'm not sure how healthy he'll be for this game, but certainly the spot, right? The situation is Super Bowl revenge. This is a game the Falcons have had circled. I can see why this came down.
This is actually, if this number does go off at a field goal, it'll be the shortest line we've seen with the Patriots installed as a home favorite in 3+ years. So it speaks volumes about the caliber of this matchup. Definitely a game on paper that we can only hope lives up to the expectations. Payne, you know what didn't live up to expectations? Our movie review Monday for Blade Runner. You want to talk about legitimate garbage? I haven't wanted to walk out on a movie that we've seen, well, we've been doing this 3 years on Movie Review Monday. This was the closest I came to walking out of a movie. Forget the fact that it was nearly 3 hours. Forget the fact that IMDb gave it, like I think you said, better than an 8. And Rotten Tomatoes gives this thing right around a 90. This movie was unadulterated garbage. Talk me off the ledge and tell me there was a silver lining.
Well, I tried to go outside the comfort zone with a little sci-fi. And man, did that backfire. I also didn't see how long it was before agreeing to see that.
Well, I didn't look at the length of time either. That kind of came as a curveball to me. He said, "Hey, by the way, hopefully you carved out 3 hours." I said, "What the fuck for?" You go, "Blade Runner's about 2 hours and 47 minutes," and I'm going, "This is not what I was hoping for in the least."
Fell asleep 3 times. Almost walked out after I woke up from the second nap. Harrison Ford might have been in like the last 12 and a half minutes of the movie. But like I said, I gave it a shot, gave it a chance, stepped outside the comfort zone, went sci-fi movie. I had a feeling this was going to be bad. I hand my ticket to the usher and I ask, "How is it?" He said, "I haven't seen it because everyone leaves the theater saying it's not very good." And then he went on to say, you know, they had spent $191 million making it and only did like $32 million opening weekend. I started to poke around online. I noticed they did a ton of foreign marketing, which appears smart because, you know, maybe that's the right demographic. I'm looking right now at the overall money. It's made It's grossed $160 million so far, only 60 of that in the States. But, I went in with an open mind, not for me, especially this time of year, right? You know, more than 3 hours when you factor in the previews and then the driving to and from. I just don't have 4 hours this time of year, and I would not advise seeing this.
Now, I mean, I've seen the first one. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was great, the original Blade Runner. I went into this. I actually probably like sci-fi quite a bit more than you do. I left that movie, no joke. If you'd have given me $100,000 to tell you, first off, who the main characters were and what their names were, I'd have failed miserably with that. If you'd have given me another $100,000 to explain the plot to you, I'd have failed miserably with that. And then give me another $100,000 to explain either the start, the middle, or the end. You know, if you'd have given me incremental revenue on that, I couldn't have done that. Like, I've never come out of a movie more confused and didn't care one single lick than I did for this flick.
The lady friend there, that's, you know, basically a figment of his imagination.
Yeah, that much I figured. I could figure that much out.
She's beautiful. She was in, what was the movie she was in there with the, they were selling guns. Man, my memory.
I feel like War Dogs, right?
She was in War Dogs. Oh, she got even hotter than when she was in War Dogs. And I when she says pillows in that movie War Dog, I don't know why, it always turned me on a little bit, but she's a smoke show. So that was the highlight of that movie.
Yeah, Lone Silver Lining. So little to say that this would probably be the lowest rated movie review Monday that we'll have on any flick, hopefully moving forward as well, but definitely in the history that we've done this around here. So Blade Runner, 2 thumbs down. I mean, well below a 5. The fact that, you know, the fact that Rotten Tomatoes and all of these companies, I feel like they were on the take getting inflated numbers like iTunes rankings or something along those lines. But
so you're
pure
saying
garbage.
IMDb, like, got a bunch of bots to rate it? Because usually,
yeah,
IMDb,
I feel like
it's
IMDb,
like the collection of moviegoers rating the movie, and then it comes out with this general score. So you're calling everybody idiots.
Yeah, I'm calling everybody idiots. And if you know what? I'll give opportunity. If one of our listeners sees this movie or has seen it and loves it and wants to, like, break it all down for us, we'll give them a chance to publish their article on the blog. How about that?
There you go. That actually sounds...
If they can come up with a compelling argument for why this movie wasn't complete and utter garbage, I'll give them the opportunity, a chance to showcase their talents, and you know, maybe they'll get picked up as a movie critic somewhere. That's all we can hope, is that talented writers identify opportunities. But where are we going this week to try and redeem ourselves? I'm going to let you pick.
I was between, there's only 3 right now, and I'm not sure I can. You have The Foreigner, obviously, with a weathered Jackie Storm and Pierce Brosnan.
Jackie Chan, not Jackie Storm.
I said Jackie Chan.
No, you said you have a weathered Jackie Storm going. I know Jackie Storm.
Yeah, Jackie Chan. Man, does he look old. Did you, by the way, for being the Regal member, did you get the email that said, "Watch this trailer and earn like 500 points?
I did, and when, you know, the fact that I was able to watch a trailer earn points, I immediately decided the movie was going to be garbage.
That's exactly where I was going with this.
That's the exact connection. I have a big feeling, and, you know, people have seen a lot more movies than we do, a general sense is, the more they spend on pre-marketing movies, the more times we see it circulated. Forget the Star Wars family and some of the bigger names that are out there, but the more trailers and the more bribes that they're putting out there to try and get you to watch these trailers makes me think the movie is just going to be legitimate garbage.
7.4 on IMDb right now. So, you know, maybe I'll go see The Foreigner on my own with Jackie Chan. But
yeah, better. Better.
You know, probably not going to be this week. The Mountain Between Us. I mean, I feel like I've seen the plane crash in cold weather survival thing before. Let's go with Marshall.
It was called Alive the last time we saw it, and they basically ate each other.
That was it. Yeah. Let's go with Marshall.
Not We Are Marshall, but Marshall, the story of Thurgood Marshall, I assume.
There you go.
All right, cool. Marshall it is. Movie review. We're going to look to bounce back from a losing week on Movie Review Monday and try and put one in the win column. Before we wrap up shop, though, on a busy Monday, recapping all things week 6, we do have a football game left to discuss, Payne, and our big game breakdown for Monday Night Football brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association, their American sports betting coalition that aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver all legalization efforts. For more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com. I think you'll find a lot of that information there. Fascinating to see what they're doing to try and bring sports betting to a casino near you. Marcus Mariota appears to be the starting quarterback tonight, Payne, when we look at this number that has the Tennessee Titans a 7.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 47, as we alluded to earlier, trending down off of 48 from when we started to record the podcast. Titans have owned this series, or have been owned, I should say, by the Indianapolis Colts, 11 straight by my math.
There was a lot of vigor in that.
I think that's part of it because, like, I watched, to go on another tangent, I watched Slapshot the other day, and that was always a line that got there. He owns the Chiefs. But we'll throw that out to hockey fans. I don't want to get off the topic.
Isn't that one of the more overrated series of movies?
The only one worth watching would be the original. Anything else that you watch, pure garbage.
Gotcha. Isn't that...
That's the word of the podcast, by the way. Pure, unadulterated garbage.
The guy there from the American... wedding movies there.
American Wedding. What are you going with? Jason, what are you going with?
Yeah.
No, that was...
Follow me.
You're talking about Stifler?
Stifler's got a new hockey movie coming out. You didn't let me finish. Yeah,
I think...
He's got a new one coming out. But I believe it's part two of whatever hockey series he's been in.
Oh, Goon, you're talking about.
Yes. That's what I said. I thought we were transitioning. No. I didn't have any correlation from American Pie to Slapshot. I think there's a new hockey series that's kind of goofy like that. There was a Goon movie that was like years ago, but I think they're coming out with Goon 2. That's the last time I saw Stifler.
I never saw Goon 1, and so, I guess this podcast has officially gone off the rails. We should probably get back to the football game. I take full responsibility for where we're going with this.
What we had to do to record today.
Oh, this was a legitimate fiasco. Apparently, I have gremlins in my telecom system and my cell phone. It's lucky that I have a line to the outside world.
Whatever's going on in Vegas between Cox and AT&T. Usually, you don't get great service, but, I mean, zero connection today. So, we've had to try to communicate about 17 times to even wrap this thing up. So,
Marcus Mariota, his health. Let's start there.
Well, I'm not really sure where I want to begin with this, but I had a good feeling he was playing. And if any of you guys are in our Bet the Board contest, you can see the number we used on Wednesday, and that indicated that my information was correct and he was going to play. Now, the question becomes, initially that upgrade from Mariota to as bad as Castle has been, and this is even with Mariota not being great, you're looking at about 6 points. Now you got to figure out what Mariota is. And from what I've been told is he's not going to be overly mobile tonight. And so then I proposed a question to one of my guys with information. I said, well, why are they making this change? And the response was they're going to go from one statue who can't pass to another statue that can pass. And so I wouldn't expect to see him at 100% tonight.
And where's so now Billy? Where's Billy Volek when you need him? Where's Billy Volek when you need him? Doesn't he?
Or Clipboard Jesus. They had Whitehurst there for a while, I believe.
Yep, they did. I feel like Charlie Whitehurst is like 52 years old right now.
That's true. They also had Mettenberger there for a while.
Oh, Matt. Look at us going into the pantheon of Titans quarterbacks that were terrible when they actually got chances to play.
Big weekend for LSU. You never know. Might transition to the NFL side.
Very good point. May as well go dust to Marcus Russell.
That's
off
the handicap.
The scrap,
that's it right
heap
there
as well.
That's the handicap. Just sign Mettenberg and get him out there, and it's Titans in a blowout. Now we end this podcast. So back to being some semi-serious here. You know, I'm not quite sure what he's going to be. Obviously, you know, we're going to line this up for leaning under. And as we started recording on the podcast, this market started to get hit. 47 is still a key number. I have been, you know, from what I have been told here, concerted effort to obviously run the ball here for the Titans. Now, usually you don't have to twist Mike Mularkey's arm to run the ball. Last week we saw in Miami, they abandoned that rush. For whatever reason, I know Miami is doing a good job against it. They stacked the box, tried to make Castle beat them. But still, with Matt Castle in there, you can't throw it 32 times and run it just 20 in what was basically a one-score game or a game within touch for a majority. So I think they're going to be a concerted effort here to run the ball from the Titans. Maybe even a little bit more from Henry, because they went back, their stats department, did some metrics and did some stuff and figured out how successful they are when Henry has more touches, and apparently it's yielded good things. So I would think Henry's a little more involved today.
That being said,
Indianapolis's defense is actually, they've graded out fifth in the NFL in rush success rate defense. So that's certainly going to be the plan for them to stop the ground game if Mariota isn't 100%. You have two teams, Colts 27th in adjusted pace, Tennessee 18th in adjusted pace, and probably goes a little bit slower if Mariota's dinged up. So you can see why there's under money coming in here.
Colts offense against the Titans defense, Payne. What do you expect there from Jacoby Brissett?
Well, the Titans defense isn't very good. So he's going to have some opportunities, that's for sure. And, you know, Jacoby's performed admirably. I think he has done a very good job. Now, I know people are clamoring, saying, hey, you know, you got to stick with the hot guy when Luck comes back. Now, that's just pure and utter stupidity, but he's done a very good job. He's not Andrew Luck, but you know, he's certainly capable against this defense to move the chains without question. And you know, there's a reason this got to 8.5, and some of the sharper shops are trending towards 7. This will be interesting. This would have been a game that I would have loved to have. And I'm sure if we follow, we obviously follow him on Twitter. Be interesting to see what Dave Mason talks about in terms of splits here. In terms of money, because I was looking at the bet splits and the public's favoring the dog here.
Yeah, a little bit unusual in primetime standalone games for the public to be coming in on the dog. Now, we'll be curious to see if that number ultimately settles closer to 50-50. The other thing is you look at some of the individual books that are available and some of the sharper shops, they're closer to 50-50. So it would imply that there's some recreational money coming in on the dog. Which should be a fascinating matchup just because there's so many question marks. And the bigger thing too, Payne, whoever wins this game, by my math, owns a share of the division lead.
It's not really math. You just look at a standings column, but
I mean, that takes math for me. Given the struggles we've had recording this podcast this morning, the fact that I can do anything right is still mind-boggling to me.
We've completely gone off the rails. This is what like 20 hours of sleep a week looks like and then not having internet or phone connection. This is what transpires. So, yes, it would appear that if the winner of this game would have a share for the lead in that division. And, man, is that division just a muddled mess. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if any team is really taking the bull by the horns there. I'm debating.
This would be a big win. I mean, this is and I just throwing this out, this would be a monumental win for Indianapolis here. If they can get to 3-3 and get Luck back. The way the run defense is playing, man, they become an interesting team there if they can pull this out somehow tonight. And they'll have a chance if Mariota isn't, you know, completely 100% and somehow Castle finds himself in this game.
And the Colts at home next week against Jacksonville, a Jaguars team that may have a dinged up Leonard Fournette. A lot of interesting stories from one of the more uninteresting divisions in the National Football League, the AFC South. All right, we've gone off the rails a ton. Hopefully we've given you information that you can use to get to the window and take the best of some of the early markets. Payne, any final remarks before we reconvene shop on Thursday when we break down NFL Week 7 in all its beautiful glory?
No, I mean, I think just looking at this again, I mean, we made it 8 with a dinged up Mariota, and, you know, so here we are sitting at 7.5. I mean, just not a ton of value there. Definitely lean under, but now, you know, as we kind of alluded to during this recording process, that those 24s are now gone in the first half. So, man, tough to navigate this. And my feeling is by the time this gets turned around by our producer, you know, in an hour, hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours based on the struggles we've had today, I mean, you know, you could be off that key of 47 too. So, again, you know, we keep saying this, you know, we haven't had much on these primetime games. I know a lot of people don't love that. But when you start to see the final score after we've talked, you kind of get what we're saying here. You know, the last couple, I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I should have wrote this down, but I feel like I've been marking these last few games that we've talked about. And it's like, hey, made this game this. And I said last week, maybe at 4, you get a slight lean to the Bears. And, you know, the game falls 3. Game actually, if you were betting it right before kickoff, probably would have pushed. You could have had some hooks that were available, but, you know, basically the game falls within a hook of the closing line. A lot of these games on prime time have been fantastic numbers. We'll see if this continues to be the case. But again, I don't have a penny on this game, so I'm certainly not going to advise someone else to risk their hard-earned money if I'm not in the trenches with them.
I am right there with you. It has been a long, strange trip through 6 weeks of the National Football League season. Of course, Titans and Colts tonight. It's perfectly fine to go in, watch, maybe learn a little bit about these teams, but you won't be able to do it with a Bet the Board endorsed wager. So for Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And of course, you can always follow our Wednesday and Thursday guests, as Payne alluded to, Dave Mason at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Best of luck with all of your wagers this week. Should it be the Monday Night Football game? Should it be Major League Baseball playoffs, hockey, and the start of the NBA season on Wednesday? Hopefully we'll see you at the window.